Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is TWiT Photo with Catherine Hall and Leo Laporte, episode number 61, recorded on Tuesday, June 12th, 2012. Miss Aniela.
TWiT Photo is brought to you by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, visit audiblepodcast.com/TWiT Photo. It's time for TWiT Photo, the show where Catherine Hall and I sit down with a beautiful, wonderful, talented photographer and talk about their art, their creativity, their technique, and get some tips, too. Catherine Hall, great to see you once again.
See you as well.
Catherine Hall is a very talented photographer in her own right, and as you know, if you've seen her work at CatherineHallStudios.com. And every week on your blog, you do a little tip for all of us poor, inept wretches, the untalented ones. This week, patterns.
Yeah, so I think patterns are very important in images, and they also can serve not only as good compositional elements, but inspiration. So the shot that we're looking at now, I was actually going with a model, and we walked into the space, and I saw all the light going through the grates. And when you're shooting portraiture, you know, your goal is always to create something unique with each subject.
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes that is challenging, you know, creatively. So when you walk into a space where you see light doing something weird, or you see pattern organically in the space, it's almost like an inspiration. It's like, oh, I can do something different without really having to think about it too much.
Yes.
The environment's giving it to me. So, and
it's funny because sometimes cameras will impose a grid on the camera, but you had a grid.
Exactly.
In the real world.
Can't be crooked now, can I? And so in this situation, we walked in the room and it was like, oh, I saw the light coming through and knew that it would make the image dynamic, and working with the light instead of trying to blow it out and minimize it.
Well, and more than that, too, there's an angle to his skateboard, so which breaks these square angles that are throughout the picture, and that's kind of fun, too.
Well, and that's the goal, too, I think, you know, creating, you know, we have this grid-like structure, but creating an organic space, and which brings your attention there. And I talk about it more on my blog, but got some really good tips from Darren Rose on his Digital Photography School blog, and I include that link on the bottom.
CatherineHall.net for the website, CatherineHall.net/blog for the blog.
So look for patterns in your shots. And if you see a pattern and you're inspired by it, figure out a way to work it in.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Always look for that.
Now, we have our guest this week is somebody that you say this has been a big request.
Yes. One of the most requested
guests.
Highly
demanded.
And seeing that this is our year, pretty much year annual anniversory here.
Yes,
it's been
1 year.
Year of TWiT Photo.
Yeah.
Episode
61, it says on here. But you started a little ways
in,
so it's your year.
TWiT Photo actually started at episode 13.
Right.
So, but we're at the year mark. How's it been, Leo?
It's been a great year.
Dealing with me for 1 year.
You're the best. Are you kidding? It's been easy. Do you know what I love about the show is I really love meeting these photographers.
And that's,
you bring in such great people. So
well,
tell us
you.
About Miss Aniela.
Well, I came across her work. Actually, she first got started on Flickr. So she originally, that was how she sort of got noticed. And her work, she's just flourished. She's only 26, but a lot of things have happened very fast for her. I believe she started shooting in 2006, 2007. But her work is just so surreal, and the colors are so rich, and there's so much depth and beauty. And she's been definitely one of our most requested guests for the show. So it's quite an honor to have her here today. And the other thing you'll notice about her that I really enjoy is she's very, very, just like her images, which are a lot self-portraits.
Yeah.
She's very open.
Oh, great.
And honest, and just a really wonderful person. So,
Natalie Dibbish, we welcome you to TWiT Photo. So nice to have you.
Hi, Leo, and hi, Catherine. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be on.
So I think it's interesting. So I guess because you started on Flickr, your Flickr handle becomes your trademark, doesn't it? The Miss Aniela, that's your middle name?
Yes, yes. Miss Aniela was literally a name that I thought of for my Flickr account in 2006, and then it kind of...
Now you're stuck with it.
Yeah.
So were you a photography student? How is it that you started on Flickr?
Well, I was actually at university at the time, and it was actually in a media lesson where we were just randomly looking at photo sharing. It wasn't a very practical degree by any means, but I discovered Flickr, and in my spare time started taking pictures to put onto Flickr, and then it became like a hobby, and then flourished into kind of a semi-career while still at university, and then afterwards full-time thing.
I'm not surprised. These are beautiful works. Did you start, I mean, were your first works on Flickr like your current work, or was it very different?
My earlier work tended to be quite colourful. I mean, generally speaking, I mean, there's still some of my earliest work on my website. Nowadays, I do delve a little bit more into darker work, but at the beginning, it was very, very vibrant, and I think that's what was one of the factors that got it noticed on Flickr.
And then how did that transition happen? So you're on Flickr, and you're getting a following, and there's obviously traction where people start to notice your work. How did that all evolve?
I think the main thing that happened is I was noticed by a gallery in Brighton, and that's when I started to do something physical for the first time. So I'd done these pictures for about a year, and then was invited to do an exhibition in my town that I was in at the time. And
but
that was
never,
really exciting. You'd
never done prints before.
She never made a print.
No. So it was all new to see things being printed out, and yeah, it was very fun.
Oh,
and
that's cool. Yeah.
And I didn't really, because the thing is, I didn't really set out with the goal of being, you know, a photographer, but maybe subconsciously I did want to do that. I mean, you never really know. I think I did want to be an artist in some respect, but wasn't sure at first that this was the way it was going to happen. So it was great when it started to, you know, feel like it was a real substantial thing I was doing.
These are very painterly. Were you a painter as well?
No, I'm not good at painting.
It's interesting. I mean, they're really, they're so imaginative, and they tell a story. They feel like paintings almost.
Yeah, very much. I mean, in most of my work, not every single one, but in the vast majority, I do think of my work as putting it together like a painting. Mm-hmm. Thinking about it as a piece rather than just a shot. That's very much the approach that I still carry through to today.
Yeah. Really gorgeous.
And
stuff.
The Photoshop technique. So you were studying art. Did you learn Photoshop in school, or were you self-taught? Because, I mean, and how much, you're doing a lot of Photoshop work with your images, correct?
Yeah, generally. There are some pictures that barely have any, but the vast majority, my instinct is to work on it very organically in the post-production. And I must admit, I mean, a lot of the time it's what I enjoy the most is when I get into Photoshop and I can really make sense of what I'm doing, and some of the time do completely transformational things in Photoshop. But as far as learning Photoshop, I've just learned it myself, really. I haven't studied it in a formal way at a course or at university. It's just something that I've kind of harnessed through the years to be able to do the things that I want to do in it. And it's not been necessarily that difficult, because a few key tools are the main things that I use. I don't use anything really that fancy in Photoshop.
Here's an example. So you'd almost say this is a straight photo, except for that you realize that in the mirror, she's doing something different from the original. So is it just a question of compositing a second photo into the mirror?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the time, like in this situation, there's a few shots that are kind of taken in that same moment. Even if there was no tripod involved, it's kind of roughly the same frame. And then you can get imaginative with changing and swapping parts of that same frame. So, yeah, very, very simple compositing job in this case.
And in this case, it looks like it's not touched at all.
Yeah, that's right. It's not. It's the main thing was the crop, to kind of get that composition, to chop off the head at the top, and to change the hue of the wall into from what was originally a blue into more of a turquoise. But the smoke there was originally over my face, which attracted me to that shot out of all the other ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, the background color really pulls that shot
together. It pops it. Yeah.
having it.
Yeah, that's what attracted me to that as it went along.
Yeah. How are you staying? So you're starting off, and like many photographers that are initially getting started, you don't have access to models, so you're shooting yourself. And I talked a little bit about the show, how hard it is to stay creative with models. How do you take it to the next level, staying creative when your subject's actually not changing?
Sorry, with self-portraiture or
yeah.
models?
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because I took self-portraits kind of consistently for a couple of years. And then in the last year and a half or so, I've been delving into shooting other models. And I'm really starting to see now the kind of pros and cons of each scenario. Because obviously, like you say, you know, shooting yourself does, you do get this point where you kind of get maybe a bit bored of it, or you want just someone else, you know, someone who looks different. And that's great. But then when I do shoot other models, I miss the reliability of just being able to, you know, be myself and not have any fuss with model releases or agreements. Right. And also just being able to do it completely on your own terms whenever you want. So
I think a lot of Flickr photographers are shooting themselves for that reason. They're new. They can't afford models. They are the most reliable model. I love this shot.
Yep.
Do you do a timed release? Do you do a cable release? How do you shoot something like this? Because you're on one side of the truck. The camera's on the other side of the truck.
Yeah.
Well, different situations. First, when I first started out, I was using the timer on the camera a lot, which I still use sometimes.
Running around to the other side.
Yeah. Well, in this particular case here, to quickly clarify that this was taken by my partner, Matthew. And when I met him in roughly 2006, 2007, quite near the beginning then of my photography career, he's kind of become a little bit involved at the start. And then now he's he works with me alongside as part of Miss Aniela Photography. So he's become increasingly on board, and he's really in the same mindset as me. So sometimes he literally holds a camera, and at other times we collaborate more artistically. He's definitely a really important part of a picture for the way things operate.
I love this.
But also, when I do still take, I do still kind of indulge in doing a complete self-portrait, just like the old days for me. So I go out with my remote, or the timer if the remote doesn't work, because I found that remotes are very flaky. But I just do a picture completely by myself, which can come out in some interesting kind of unforeseen situation sometimes.
Is this a self-portrait? I think this must be. I can't tell.
Yeah, I set the camera on the tripod for this one. So this is one of my most transformational pictures. I mean, I wouldn't advocate normally doing so much in Photoshop to your picture, but this looks completely different from the original shot.
Ah, fun. So the gallery in Brighton sees your Flickr.
Yeah.
Says, this girl ought to get a show. She's still in university, and you got a show. Then what? Because this all must have happened kind of quickly.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of like a little bubble of kind, I use the word fame, but like a little bit of fame happening, where I got this BBC interview at the time, and things started to feel like they were going somewhere. But I was also very, very cautious, because everyone knows, you know, people show interest in you, but the next day, you know, that's it. And really what I craved was, you know, longevity in a career. Yeah. So I took it all on the chin, really, and just continued doing what I do. And then I think one of the other important things that happened is, a year following, I had an exhibition in Madrid where I really started to feel like, you know, my work could be going somewhere, I guess, because it was going abroad, and because it was an esteemed kind of fine art gallery, which would potentially plug me into art fairs and things like that. So that happened, and that was exciting. But still, you know, I was discovering how the life of an artist, nothing really is guaranteed, and you don't get things kind of handed to you regularly. You know, someone hands you one thing, but then you've got to make things work, happen yourself as well. So, you know, I was starting to discover that, and to realize that, you know, you've got to really make your own things happen, your own life. You've got to build together your whole life as an artist. So, yeah, these things were exciting. They were things to put on the CV, but I just wanted to make sure I was kept interested genuinely in photography and thought about where I was going with it.
How much was the community on Flickr important to you? What were the things that helped you learn and grow so fast? Was it the comments that you received on Flickr, or were those a distraction? I could see they could go both ways. Yeah.
Especially when you're just getting started.
Yeah.
Definitely. I think my relationship with Flickr has stayed quite consistent over the years, actually, because I feel the same way about it now, the way I'm about to describe. I do feel sometimes in two minds. There's enough people on there to, well, not people, but there's enough kind of like things about Flickr that make me cautious of it. But there's enough to keep me using it as well, because the when I first started taking pictures and putting them on Flickr, it's people's comments overall that really kept me going, I guess, because they wanted to see more pictures from me, and it felt really great that, you know, people were watching. But at the same time, it's not like they were a crutch, because you've got to really have passion inside you to want to do something to start with. It's not like I was doing it for people completely, but their support was really important, because it really made you feel like you have an audience as an artist, which I think is important for an artist to feel like they have some purpose, you know. And so that's continued to this day, where I put work on Flickr, and I try not for Flickr to be the only thing that I do, as it was at the start. I was very focalized on it, but now I try to treat it as one social media website amongst a variety of others.
You use Twitter and Facebook very actively as well.
Yeah.
You mentioned being cautious with Flickr. Can you tell us what you mean by that?
I think trying not to be too suckered in when people do love a picture, because the sad thing is that the next day you'll do a picture and they won't like it. Or I don't know, maybe this is just my experience, because I don't know if everyone has this, but sometimes I feel like, you know, people like a certain type of work from you, and it means that it could lead you down the wrong path, because you might end up trying to do more of that particular work that they like. And so it might go against what you truly want to do. So, for example, I know that, you know, a certain type of picture that's more colourful or looks better small or has an element of nudity in, all these things add up to make a kind of picture that's more popular, that's going to be more popular. Whereas if you do something a bit darker, a bit more obscure, a bit more kind of thoughtful, it's not as attention-grabbing as other pictures. So you've got to be careful you're staying true to yourself and not taking too seriously the overly gushing comments, but neither taking too seriously the kind of like pompous, overly critical comments either, because you've really got to know what you want to do and put it out there, I think.
It's the problem. This is so great, because Miss Aniela is really the modern photographer, right?
Yeah.
Somebody who started not only in the digital age, but in the
year.
Flickr
yeah.
age, in the social media age. And I think but this is something every artist has always had to deal with, is on the one hand, pleasing an audience, which really does help feed you,
yeah.
but at the same time, not being driven by the audience, because you also have to come from your heart. So it's a very interesting balancing act, whether it's Flickr or anywhere else. It's really a challenge, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And talking about challenges with the portraits, self-portraits, I'm curious, what were the biggest challenges that you faced when you were initially creating these self-portraits, and how did you overcome them?
I think everybody who creates self-portraits at some point encounters that inevitable accusation of narcissism.
Yes.
And I don't know. I mean, I'm well over that now, to be honest. I think in the initial year or so, you know, I felt the need to defend myself and to write blog posts and things about how, you know, I was trying to figure out to myself, I guess, am I narcissistic? I tend to think a lot about things. So I was really trying to figure out, you know, what are the reasons that I do self-portraiture? And there's loads of reasons why. And there's loads of reasons why other people do self-portraiture as well, which has been interesting to explore. I mean, my first book was about self-portrait photography. So I had like 8 other contributors in there, and they all do self-portraits, and they all recount their stories and their motivations behind putting themselves in front of the camera. So nowadays, you know, I fully accept that I'm a model, you know, I'm an instrument to use in my artwork. And if people don't get that, that's fine, you know. At the start, I kind of battled with that a little bit, and But regardless, I still went on doing it, and because it felt right.
Do you ever feel vulnerable or self-conscious as the subject? And how do you get overcome that?
I think maybe I feel the most at risk if I do a picture that does show me more exposed. And I don't necessarily mean nude. I mean more like, it can be nude, but also just maybe not looking ideal in the way you want to look. So sometimes you want to kind of go a bit deeper and show yourself looking maybe not so much necessarily at your best, but you want to show yourself in an element and evoke a mood. And sometimes you've got to, you know, just go with that desire. And because really, I mean,
this might be one of those. Do you feel like this is very revealing?
This is actually one of the most personal pictures I've done, because I've not normally use personal references for my own life, but this was kind of in reference to my father and trying to do something that was quite sentimental for his birthday, with the whole mushroom idea. And because he basically passed away when I was a child, and he loved mushroom picking, and I wanted to do something that referred to him. But to be honest, in my self-portraiture, often I don't get very personal, you know, I keep it quite abstract. And I think that is a form of protection a little bit, because it's not like you feel like you are in the images.
Right.
Matthew, can you just take that, please?
We're talking to Natalie Dibbish. You probably know her as Miss Aniela. Tell you what, Natalie, we'll take a break. And then obviously there's a phone call. She is in the south of England where she works. And she's Miss Aniela on Flickr. But you can go to her website as well, which is missaniela.com.
missaniela.com.
Very active Facebook. I just liked her on Facebook. joining Trey Ratcliffe, Frederick Van Johnson, a bunch of my other photographer friends who are already fans of Miss Aniela. So go ahead and take that, Miss Aniela. We'll take a break.
No.
Do you prefer that? Should we call you Miss Aniela or Natalie?
Yeah. Either. I don't mind.
Yeah.
Either,
but Miss Aniela is also you and Matthew, right? I mean, it's not just you, or is
it? Yeah, that's true. It's become a little bit of it is a business name. We use it as, you know, Miss Aniela Photography, but also I kind of use it interchangeably as a name to refer to me when I'm talking about my artwork.
Yeah. We're going to talk more with Miss Aniela. I like it.
I like it, Miss Aniela.
Just a bit. Natalie Dibbish. On TwitPhoto, but first a little word from our sponsor, Audible.com. We're big fans of Audible.com. You drive all this way. Do you listen to audiobooks?
Yes.
You have to.
I'm addicted to audiobooks.
If you have a commute, if you work out, as I do, an hour a day, those are normally times you can't read a book. But wouldn't it be nice if you could add reading back into your life at a time when you're in the car or you're walking the dog, or you're working out. That's just kind of downtime. That's what I do. And I tell you what, I now get 2 or 3 hours of reading in a day without losing any of my busy day, and it's just wonderful. I started doing audiobooks when I had a long commute to San Francisco for Tech TV, and that was 2000, I think I started listening. And since then, I've read 500 books that I probably would have never read. And the beauty of Audible is those books are in my Audible library. If I use the Audible app, I can see every book I've ever read. I can listen to it again, which is often a lot of fun. And the selection, since I joined Audible at first, has grown to, I guess immense would be the term, well over 100,000 titles. Now when a new book comes out, it comes out on Audible.com. But we have so many Audible authors. Oops, sorry about that. I guess Adobe wants an upgrade. Let's go back to Audible. We have so many Audible authors on our shows. It's really kind of, it's hard for me to keep up, frankly. Baratunde's book is on there. I see that there is going to be very soon a new Daniel Suarez book. That's one I certainly will listen to on Audible. I listened to his, in fact, this might be a good chance to listen to his first two books so you get ready for Daniel's new book. Damon came out a couple of years ago, and this may be one of the most dramatic listens you have ever. I'll just play a little bit. This is Jeff Gerner narrating Daniel Suarez's Damon. I don't know if you have audio. Maybe you don't have audio out of my
type
my laptop.
In when you're done with that. Type in the WHO method of hiring.
The WHO. Oh, now see, this is the thing. That's fiction, okay?
And
but
there's
also business
like me,
books.
Who, the anal Virgo who
Jeff
has to
Smarts,
be learning all the time.
WHO, the method, the A method for hiring.
For anyone that hires employees
has this
or
worked for
contractors,
you?
Particularly employees, this book has changed my life.
Really?
It's incredible.
All right, so see what I'm going to do here? Yeah. And this is what we do whenever you meet somebody who's an Audible listener. Add to wish list. And now that's in my wish list.
So you have to tell Lisa. She needs to.
Yeah, because we got to find out how to hire right, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So whether it's science fiction, bestsellers, business books, self-help, they've got books for kids and teens that are great, too. This is a great way to get a teen or a young person who's not into reading into reading. Because it's just like having mommy read to you or daddy. It's really wonderful to have somebody read you a book. It brings the book to life. Now, here's our deal.
You could change careers. You know, you could read Audible books.
when I retire, that's all I'm going to do is read out loud. I can't wait. I read out loud to my kids until they wouldn't let me do it anymore. And it's really great.
Yeah, you'd definitely drive up sales.
I love it. Audiblepodcast.com/twitphoto. You can go there right now and get your first book. What you'll be doing is sign up for the Gold account. That's the book a month plan. But your first month's free. Your first book's free. You can cancel it any time. The book is yours to keep forever. So a great way to try Audible.com. I highly recommend it. Audiblepodcast.com/twitphoto. They've asked me to do books several times, and the problem is I'm just so busy here. It's a fairly long process to read books.
I have a retirement plan.
But it's my – exactly. I can't wait because I love reading, and I love to read out loud. Audiblepodcast.com/twitphoto.
Do you read out loud when nobody's listening, Leo?
I do. I do. I beg people to let me read to them. Nobody will let me. My kids, when they got to about eighth grade, they was like, yeah, see
you. You know what Bert told me? A little insight on you.
What?
I said, I'm going to be lucky to get a word in edgewise with the show.
Yeah, because Bert and I are old friends. Yeah.
And he started laughing. I said, what? He goes, Leo used to steal the words from the teleprompter that I was supposed to say.
Not on purpose, I hope. Natalie Dibbish is our guest.
So Lisa, no, it's not just me.
It's not just you. Miss Aniela, you may have seen her on Flickr, and if you haven't, go to her website, missaniela.com. She's also on Facebook and Twitter. Are you on Google Plus as well, Natalie?
I am, actually, yes.
That's become the place for photographers.
Just search me. I don't know how to actually...
there you are.
Yeah, I mean, just search me on Google Plus.
There you
I'm
are.
I'm on there.
Miss Aniela. Oh, just
her profile photos are
so romantic. Do you think you're
I've never heard my name pronounced so correctly so many times.
I like saying
it.
Aniela.
Aniela.
Are you a deep romantic or are you a cynic who likes to play on our romance?
Is that directed at me?
Yeah, well, who else?
That's a good question.
Miss Aniela.
I'm a bit of both.
Oh, see? Because I'm looking at these.
You must elaborate.
These are so romantic. They're so beautiful.
The woman hanging from the chain is romantic.
I have strange notions. No, but I mean, okay, that's a bad example. But you know what I'm saying? It is kind of romantic, isn't it?
These I love your question, Leo. Can you elaborate on your answer, Miss Aniela?
Look at these.
Oh, I definitely would say I'm a bit of both. I find a lot of inspiration in beautiful things, and indeed, a lot of my pictures are, you know, could be described as beautiful. And then there's also an eerier edge and
exactly.
even a scary edge, some of them, which
exactly.
and I enjoy the kind of binary opposition of, you know, the two opposites coming together in a jarring way, sometimes with uncertainty. I mean, there's pictures of mine where you look up first and it looks like a beautiful scene, and then you look closer and see something you didn't expect. And that's an element in some of my nude pictures, which you can see in the ecology set on my website. So that's something I like playing with. I like surprising people like that.
Well, this is a perfect example because at first it's very erotic. And then, at least speaking as a guy, it's terrifying.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, there's just something, you know, there's something wrong immediately, and it's scary. This is almost this is almost a horror picture, right? She's got four legs.
Yeah, horrifying.
No, so you're doing, is this all with Photoshop, these composites?
Yeah, I use Photoshop for all of my compositing work, yeah.
Actually, she wanted to give us a demo.
Yeah,
would this be a good time?
Yeah, that would be a great time.
Look at this one. This is two shots composited one on top of the other, I would guess, yeah?
Yeah, quite simple, really.
I bet you took a little eyedropper and made that arrow the same color as the dress.
Maybe
not.
It was close to that color, though.
Maybe it's serendipity.
I may have just tweaked it. I can't remember. It was a long time ago.
Maybe that's serendipity. I just love this stuff. This is also scary, but romantic. I'm sorry, but
this
that's...
This is actually one of the very few pictures where, you know, I haven't really done compositing. It was actually one of my exercises in trying to get juxtapositions within the composition itself.
Right.
So I thought it was kind of fun to try that.
Love it.
Well, and there's so much depth, and this is a perfect example, is that depth and compositional elements in your images. Can you talk to me a little bit about depth and how you use that in your photography?
Yeah, I mean, depth is something I talk about when I'm trying to give tips for creating, you know, effective images. And it's tricky because I'm trying to puzzle it out when I'm shooting. I'm trying to figure out, you know, how can I get depth into this picture? Sometimes it's about getting, you know, the model away, the model or whoever's in the picture, away from the wall, trying to get more of an angle from the wall between yourself and the wall and the model and the props. Like the picture you just put on then, you know, is a good example because that's kind of like at an angle and it's slightly down, pointing up. So that's, you know, a good example of depth and trying to get those shadows behind her and the objects behind her whilst also not being too far away from her. And also other ways to get depth into pictures. Like, for example, shooting in the mist. You know, I've not done a great deal of pictures in the mist, but I found that it's a perfect kind of opportunity to... I mean, the reason why pictures in the mist look so great is because you've got this layer behind the subject that implies a depth, you know, between them and their background. So it instantly becomes so kind of magical. You barely have to do anything in Photoshop to bring out that three-dimensional effect.
Yeah, and you talked about... I forgot what I was going
to I know
say.
You love playing with light, the light in the midst. Here's an example on the iPad, if you show the iPad, of a nude... This is newer work. You're starting to verge into horror here.
Yes. I was thinking of this one when you mentioned the horror.
Yeah. That is straight out of of Geiger. You know, this is alien territory we're talking here.
That was straight out of camera.
No. That's definitely not true.
She got you for a second there.
I did. I had to look more closely.
He moved closer. I thought, wow, Leo, you're really cool
today. Do you want to do the compositing? Because we haven't.
Yeah, I think so.
I think Miss Daniela could do a demo for us.
Before we do the compositing, I did want to say one thing, and she made a really good point about keeping the models away from the wall. And I think one of the things that photographers do when they're first getting started and they're nervous about directing
is they
want to give the model something to hold or lean on or interact with their environment, and it's easier to use the wall as a prop. But then the negative result of that is that there's no depth. And so I'm really glad you said that. For emerging photographers, even though it feels more comfortable and easier to shoot to stick someone on a wall, you will lose that dimension.
Here's an example of that and mist all together in layers and depths.
Yeah. I loved doing this picture because it was really a surprise for me to do this. You know, the taillights in the mist was something myself and Matthew shot this because he shot the mist and I shot myself. And then the two came together. And once they came together, it was so powerful. It was so much more interesting than me just by myself. And obviously, you know, the pairing of the two together made it into the image that I ultimately wanted. But the taillights and the mist had an effect that I just couldn't predict. And it was very kind of apocalyptic. Yep. And I loved that effect.
Yep.
Do you think if you had started off with images, you talked a lot about, you know, getting attention on social media sites and using a lot of bright colors and richness. If you had started off with images like this one, do you think you would have attracted the popularity that you did initially?
I'm not sure, actually. I mean, when I put a picture up like that nowadays, sometimes I do feel like the attention is a slow burner. So whether or not I do it now or earlier on in my career, I'm not sure whether it would change the path itself. Although I must say that picture in particular was quite popular when I put it up on Flickr. People really seem to get the vibe of it, which I loved. You know, never really know what people are going to think when I put my pictures up. So the fact that people really got it and felt the atmosphere was nice, because it is quite, you know, darker compared to my brighter, more colourful, playful work.
We should mention, you do sell these prints as prints, yes?
Yeah, I sell all my work as prints, limited edition prints, and I exhibit them as well. I haven't had an exhibition for this year yet, but I sell my prints to people who want to buy them directly and to exhibit, put them in their homes.
And you do workshops and books. In fact, yeah. This is from the Ecology series. Is that going to be an exhibit or a book or?
The Ecology series.
Yeah.
That's an ongoing series. Yeah, I definitely want to exhibit it in the future. It's something that is a body of work that I've already kind of showed a little bit in my book, my latest book, but not as as part of shoots that I talk about. So,
right.
The book is called Creative Portrait Photography. So it's about all kinds of different series that I'm working on and that I've done. And it's structured by stories. So it goes into different shoots I've done and talks about everything that I've encountered, thoughts, technical, artistic considerations to the final result of each image.
How fun. And and digital too, because that's all you do.
Yeah, and you have your book, your recent book with you, is that right?
Well, yeah, what's the name?
Yeah, it's right here.
Hold it up.
It happens to be right there. Thank you, Matthew.
There it is.
Yes.
I've got the cover on my screen too, Greg, if you want to pull that, or Brian, if you want to pull that up.
And so you have your own work, and then you also have other photographers' work featured in here as well, correct?
Yeah, that's right. So my first book, Self-Portrait, I had 8 self-portrait artists, and this time I chose other artists who do images that are imaginative portraiture. You know, this book is, I'm quite excited about this book, not just because it's my book, but because, you know, the books out there in the market, there are a lot of guidebooks and there are a lot of really high-end art books, and there's seldom something in between, you know, something that has interesting, inspiring work but also talks about it. And so it was great to put these contributors in, because they all have that same kind of ethic, you know, they're all artists who do fantastic work. And they also got in something interesting to say about their work as well. So for example, there's an artist in there called Kirsty Mitchell, who's actually having a ton of fame at the moment because her work, her series Wonderland, which is literally being exhibited in a storefront on Regent Street at the moment. And her work is just amazing. 3 years worth of, you know, making these really intricate props and sets and putting them together and photographing them. So everything is almost all in camera. And then we've got someone like Brooke Shaden who also kind of used self-portraiture to leverage her more wider career as an artist. And her work is always so driven, and she's always being creative. And it's really interesting to see her speak, because she's just got so much get up and go, you know, she's always creating. And that's something that's so inspiring to see, because artists need that. They need that kind of pick me up to keep creating. And there's other contributors, Alex Stoddard, who's madly popular on Flickr, and he's a really brilliant emerging talent. Peter Kemp, who does these amazing setups. He's a Dutch photographer. And he does these setups, kind of both studio and location, which are very waxwork-like and very moody and classical-looking. And Susanna Benjamin, who's really interesting, a slightly subtler work. And I love having her in, because she's so young and she's got, you know, so much potential to become a really important creative, you know. But these are all people who think very deeply about their work, and you know, they're not just really showy people. You know, they've really got some substance to their work. So it's fantastic to have them in there.
So without further ado, can you show us some compositing tips?
Yeah, I certainly can. I recently did a little video on this picture that I'm about to talk about. So the picture is called Migration Season. And what I'm going to do is share my screen. Just, there we go. So this picture was created, is actually created during a one of my workshop events, which is called the Fashion Shoot Experience. And it's more like a shootout than a workshop. It's where basically myself and a bunch of other photographers shoot five models in a great location. And I shoot as well. And this is one of the pictures that I created. Let me just show you the... So this is the video where I basically went through the whole production of this image. And this video is available on YouTube. It's called From Pixels to Vogue, Making of Surreal Fashion. And this video shows in speeded up form not only the step-by-step compositing, but also the original shots that I did to achieve the...
Oh, it's nice to see the original, yeah, because that's very different from the final, yeah.
Well, so these pictures here, so...
When you're shooting these composites, do you have in your mind the final shot you're going for?
Well, a lot of the time, not exactly. Sometimes a lot of it, I mean, I need some kind of inkling. Everyone mm-hmm. needs some kind of inkling of what they're going to do. And in this case, I'd already started my Surreal Fashion series, and I knew that I had this thing about kind of quirky props and also in particular bird type things. So I came across this wallpaper in the venue and I knew straight away that I was going to do something with it. So that was a bit more, I had a bit more assurance in my mind than I might normally have, that I was going to do something with this wallpaper. And so also I'm aware that when I do a picture like this, let me just show you the final thing so you know what I'm talking about. So that's pretty much the final thing there. I knew that I needed something with space because there has to be some space for something to happen. Mm-hmm. So I shot the model full length, you know, with my most used lens, which is my 24-70mm zoom lens. And I also extended the canvas as well in Photoshop, so I had even more space. And then all the kind of magic of the birds seemingly coming alive happened. So if I go into Photoshop here, you can see this is one of the first... I've got two Photoshop files for this in total, and this is the one before I did the overall adjustments, where I've literally got all the different layers here before I flattened it and worked on the overall effects. So if I just peel these back, you can see how back to the bare bones, which is the original shot here with the canvas extended and then reworked to bring in the extra bit of wall, the extra bit of wallpaper. I mean, sometimes in these situations, it is quite cramped, you know? I mean, I couldn't have got this wide scope because... In reality, there was this led out into another part of the room. So this was the best bit of wall to use in order to get that interesting door in as well. So sometimes these things are necessary to do it like that because it's just not the same in reality. And, you know, I was cutting out birds, like in the video here. So this shows the shots and... When I took the shot of her with the skirt flared out, I knew that was going to be the one because it's just had something interesting about it, you know. I guess as a fashion image, it's got potential. Obviously, I went to put a lot of birds over it, so it's not necessarily the ideal fashion image, but in terms of the shape, it was really nice here. I love the feeping out here, so I knew it was going to be the one that I was going to work with. So after extending the canvas, I used floor from another picture just to fill in there, measuring that up and just putting that in.
I love this series. Then, there's quite a few of these images. They're just dramatic.
Yeah. There's quite a lot of images along this same kind of theme using, right. You know, animals that are essentially fictional. They're painted or they're drawn and they're incorporated into the picture to make them look almost like they're becoming real, but they're fictional. And in this in this case, you know, I really loved doing this because I knew enough of where it was going to go. But there was still an element of surprise as to where it was going to go, because when you're making a picture like this, you can't think too logically, because sometimes if you think too logically, things don't look good. You know, they fall flat. So I was cutting out these birds like I'm doing here in this video, and I was putting them in, and I was literally feeling around, you know, placing right. them around, moving them around till they felt as if they were dropping into the right place. Right. So you see this bird here, I'm moving it around until it becomes natural to place it on the floor, upside down, dead, of course. So,
this is very Lewis Carroll. This feels a lot like Tenniel's illustrations of Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah. I'm very much inspired by illustrations in books, particularly of children's books like that. Like you just mentioned, Alice in Wonderland and C.S. Lewis's Narnia Chronicles. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm playing more on that inspiration in my recent work by using these illustrational elements. So with this picture, you know, I've put quite a lot of components in, which makes it a good candidate to talk about when it comes to compositing, because there's so many different directions it could have gone in, you know. So this big bird here, I played with it for quite a while, wondering whether this beak over the dress was a good idea, you know, because where else could its beak go?
Right.
I didn't want to distract from her face too much, so it had to be coming in a way that was interesting but not too obvious, because the most obvious thing I could have done was to just have a bird standing alongside her as if it was just next to her. But I wanted something a little bit more than that. So here I am just playing, cutting out birds and deciding where to put them and ejecting some of them and ultimately ending up with a lot of layers, as you see here, and deciding which should stay and which should go. And that's always, you know, one of the hardest things about compositing is where do you stop?
Right.
You know, especially doing something as eclectic and strange as this, how do you know how much is too much? And really, you've just got to kind of be honest with yourself. Sometimes you have to take things away as well as add things. And that's certainly what I was doing in this particular picture.
I mean, do you have to leave and then come back to get that sort
yes,
of sense of
advise that.
Where to stop?
I would advise that, although with this picture, I was just blitzing away at it for hours. And I ended up sharing it online the same day as making it, which is rare. I don't normally advise that because normally you should give your eyes a rest and come back to it. But if you look at this bit here that I'm showing, this is a bit where the leg of the bird merged with the foot of the girl. And I really felt like this was a clicking point. This is where I got excited because it's where this strange synergy started to occur, where I felt like this leg meant to be here, you know? So I carried on kind of playing with that because it was almost like the bird was being uncovered from underneath her skirt there. And that's where I really started to feel a conviction that it was going to work. Another thing I must say is that when I was compositing this, I wasn't entirely aware that I was making this bird shape here. Because obviously you can see how the shape of the skirt finishes off this bird here. And this was something that I was doing subconsciously at first. And this is why it's really important to recognize, like I say, that some of your best decisions in photography, whether it's in shooting or processing, some of the best decisions you make are made subconsciously. So you don't always know exactly what you're doing. And sometimes that's a good thing. You've got to let that kind of right side of your brain come into play a little bit more. And then afterwards, I realized the shape was what was driving the completion of the picture.
Very nice.
And here's the overall curves adjustments I was doing when I got everything in place. Also, I added this shadow of a bird beak up here. I guess just to add a bit of dramatic effect over all the components that were in place. And then just fine details. You know, I love doing those fine little details after the building blocks are in place. And it's like literally a painting. You know, you're going in and you're tweaking things and you're dodging and you're doing the odd bit here and there. And it really feels like it's a final completed, you know, painting almost, in the technical essence of the word. I'm also literal a little bit sometimes because the pictures can look like they're not photographs anymore in some right. cases. You know, they take on more of a, you know, almost like a dreamy appearance.
Yeah, that's why I asked if you were a painter and before you were a photographer. There's such a painterly feel to a lot of your images. They're very romantic. Look at that. So this is a video. If you want to watch the process, you've put it up on YouTube, which I think is great. There are also Vimeo videos and others on your website as well at missaniela.com. Here's some more. I've got, Greg, if you'll show my screen. There you go. Here's some more from this series. Look at that. There's a little, it looks like a paper mache element, elephant that's in there. Just, I love the beauty and the romance. And yet some of the edge in your work, Natalie. Miss Aniela.com. Her book is on Amazon. Very affordable. Under $20.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
So everybody should buy a copy right now. Look at that. You know, she would love Burning Man, wouldn't she?
Yes, she would.
Yeah. We've got to get
yes.
Look at her. Her eyes perked.
We've got to get you to come out to Burning Man.
I'll take care of you if you want to go.
I'm a little bit scared of the whole prospect because it sounds very immersive.
It's like this everywhere.
Yeah.
You don't, it's not just in front of the camera, it's everywhere.
Yeah, this is true.
Lovely shots. Natalie, such a pleasure meeting you. Thank you so much for being on our show today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure. It really has. This is the first time I've done a live interview, and I haven't been too scared.
Good.
Well, good. You did a great job.
It was an excellent rehearsal. Okay, you ready? We can start the cameras now. No, you did a great job. Still on Flickr, still posting on Flickr, Facebook, Twitter, Google Plus. I know you've just started there. And a great place to start is the website. There's information about the books, where to get prints, the workshops too, missaniela.com. Natalie, thank you so much for staying up late.
Thank you. You got to say Miss Aniela.
Miss Aniela.
This is your last chance. Another thing, the Spanish accent.
Signora Aniela. Thank you so much for being a weasel.
She said that you were saying her name well, Leo. Let's stick to it.
Let's not push it. All right. Thank you, Natalie. Great to meet you.
Thank you, Leo.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
And then also, Leo, I just wanted to do a quick Skip Cohen just did a workshop on Creative Live on marketing, which was spectacular.
It's huge.
Yeah. So for any of you guys out there that are having any kind of issues with marketing or need help or inspiration, check out Skip's course on Creative Live. And he talked about Twit Photo on there as well.
Oh, good.
So there you go.
Look at this shot from Miss Aniela. This looks like an old movie still, Natalie. That's just...
Oh, I know. I love
it. It feels
that
like
one.
Hitchcock shot that.
That's actually one of my long-standing personal pictures. I mean, one of my personal favorites. But usually I get really sick of my oldest work. But this one is still one that I just like. I think maybe because it's so simple.
It's beautiful.
You know, just black and white conversion, and that's pretty much it.
So. Yeah.
Are you working? Are you doing your own makeup a lot? Or are you working with artists when you're shooting yourself?
Not myself. No. Myself is just myself. I've never had my makeup done professionally. So, but for other models, certainly, yeah, we get a full team on board with the fashion events. We have a full team, and they get made up. But I'm always quite simple.
And then people have asked, are you shoot with the Mark II, correct? Or Mark III, maybe now?
Mark II.
Canon 5D, yeah. Mark II.
And then 24 to 70 is your lens of choice.
Yes, for most of my self-portraits especially. Although I've recently discovered a whole new world by using the 85mm 1.2.
Oh, I love that world.
That's my whole new world, too. Now, if only I had a model as gorgeous as Miss Aniela, I'd be set.
When we went to Norway, I didn't bring that lens, and Leo did. And I adopted it. I just took his
Isn't it
over.
Fun? Isn't it beautiful? You know, you're also an actress. This is funny. You're a painter, you're a photographer. And you're an actress, too, because especially these truck pictures. You're playing a character. That's a character, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, definitely. I definitely felt the kind of horror movie inspiration there.
Love these. Just love them. Thank you, Natalie.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Miss Aniela.
Miss Aniela. And thank you all for watching. We do Twit Photo every, this is Tuesday, right?
Yes.
Tuesday. 1:30 Pacific. I don't know. It's all a blur. 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern time. That would be 2030 UTC on twit.tv. You can watch live. We love it when you watch live. But, of course, make audio and video available after the fact always at twit.tv. And I don't know why you would listen to the audio when you can see the beautiful images.
Yeah, go to subscribe
Get the
in
video.
iTunes.
Yeah,
Large
subscribe
video
in iTunes.
And enjoy.
Yeah, yeah. And HD video coming very, very soon. In fact, I should make a note. We are going to change the large video format to a better quality format, but it may break some older devices. So if you use, for example, a second generation iPod Touch, unfortunately, iTunes just won't sync it. It won't warn you. It won't say anything. You just won't get Twit Photo next week. So starting, it may not this week, maybe the week after, you may see that. You can always get the mobile version. That will work on all platforms. We are going to do a higher quality version, and part of the transition will also give us a 720p HD version. I cannot wait to get that out to you. That's really the best way to see this show is in high def because the images are so gorgeous. So if you want to know more, twit.tv/watch. We will have sample video there so you can find out if your device is going to have trouble with the new video encoding format. Thank you, Catherine Hall, catherinehall.net, to find more of her great work. Thank you all for being here. We'll see you next time on Twit Photo. I can't stop looking at these images. Look at this one. I think you should just continue to model
like
for yourself.
That's like one of our first ones.
Yeah, don't use models. Because you're a great actor. You're acting in these. It's so funny.
I definitely will continue taking self-portraits.
Look at this. It's so much fun.
It's amazing how sometimes you really aren't recognizable and you think it's another model.
I was trying to figure out half the time. I think that's Natalie.
Yeah.
I have to do, unfortunately. Yeah, you could take that, but I have to do an audible ad.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Versatile. More versatile than you might think. So I think that's one of the allures I love about it.
Right. Nice. Very nice.
Well, you won the Creativity of the Year award.
Well, you know, I feel like Natalie must be part of a new generation of young photographers that are coming up that are very much influenced by digital, by social media, by Photoshop. It's a whole different way of thinking about photography. And it's very free, too. And a lot of them, I noticed a huge number of photographers on Flickr who are using themselves as models because that's who they've got.
Well, and you can. Like, when I was first doing photography, it was very difficult with film because you couldn't...
You can't see
really
what you're shooting.
You didn't really know what you were getting until you got to the darkroom and went through everything.
That's a good point.
So in this era, it's a lot easier to get immersed in that.
These are hysterical. Either you're quite an acrobat or you have some way of suspending yourself.
The what, sorry?
You must be quite the acrobat.
Oh, yes. That's straight out of camera as well.
No, it isn't. Stop it. This one I love, too. I love the ones where you're playing with multiple versions of yourself. That's a very interesting... Look how romantic that is. That's Gone with the Wind right there.
Amazing location, that one.
Is it? Yeah.
It kind of reminds me of Havana, actually. The structure and the sort of...
Havana or Savannah. Look at that. That's another bird...
And then go.
Like all great artists, you are obsessed with certain themes and memes, which I love. Great stuff. I love the doubling or tripling.
Do you use lights much, Natalie?
On the whole, no. I mean, most of my work that you're going through is natural lighting. In my fashion work recently, I've been playing with lighting, but mostly constant lighting. So very few are flash. I do really like kind of warm, natural, constant lighting the most. But who knows? I might evolve in a different direction, but that's certainly what I like so far.
All right. We got to run. Thank you, Natalie. Thank you.